I would like to give you today a very fast summary of goals in auditing as appertain to what the auditor does. What does an auditor do to achieve what result? Well, recently I was able to codify what an auditor was doing, regardless of how many interesting commands he might give. You see, he's only trying to handle three things: the postulates of the individual, the space of the individual, and the having of the individual, as appertain to earlier processes and so forth. He's just trying to handle these three things. Now you say, where's the energy? Well, that's the only place where an auditor gets into trouble, when he starts to handle energy. I can tell you from very long experience that any auditor who begins to handle energy as such is in for a long and arduous time, which is going to wind his pre-clear up way down scale. Any auditor who begins to handle energy as such, in other words, running concepts out of energy, is so limited that if pursued any length of time, will depress the tone of your pre-clear. Running flows, outflows and inflows, as such, if continued any length of time, will definitely depress the tone of your pre-clear. And neither one of these last two will wind up in a cleared individual. Now, the goal of the auditor is to clear somebody. Minimally, give him a definite release on some specific mental problem or psychosomatic illness. Minimally. His goal is to clear this person, and let's redefine clear slightly, just by saying that we put this individual into such a state of ability that he can exteriorize and interiorize into anything and everything he wishes, and so that he can communicate ably with something or nothing, with no qualms and without repercussion. Actually, that's quite a goal. All right. But that leaves us three things to handle. There is a fourth thing, but this is a slightly different category. Three things to handle in any basic process that you happen to use. And I don't care now whether you're using an old, ancient, antique, rickety process or a brand new, shiny one. Either way, you're just handling three things. Thought, which is to say postulates, the ability to think, the ability to change the mind, the ability to make a postulate, to make a statement. That one, space, and havingness. One, two, three. Now let's see why we handle postulates. In the final analysis, everything is a postulate. Everything came about by postulates. We just can make postulates the end all of everything, and we're very safe on it. Everything rationalizes out very nicely. And postulates, if treated as a top flight goal, bring about a very, very fine condition, the part of a pre-clear. What are you trying to get him to do, in essence? Change his mind. He has a bad leg. He's crippled. You won't get that leg well unless he changes his mind about having to have a bad leg. Believe me, you won't. The doctors can saw and hew and use axes and materia medica and Morris Fishbines and everything else on him. And by George, his leg will not get well until he has made up his mind for his leg to get well. You're not going to sneak up on a pre-clear, in other words, and suddenly say abracadabra or something of the sort, and have him get entirely well unless you at the same time are willing to accept him in his entirety into your universe and absolutely eat him and engulf him and drown all the self-determinism which he has. Now, you can make him a perfect specimen, just like a sculptor you know, can model a perfect statue. You can just engulf him in your universe, and bang, you got him. A great faith healer has to do this. No objection to you practicing faith healing or grabbing off as many individuals as you like. It's all fair game in this universe. But remember this, that it is not quite what we're doing. And if you were to get to a state where you did directed healing without the knowledge or consent of the person you were healing, remember that it is necessary to actually drag him into your universe, lock, stock, and barrel, legs, ears, tibias, and medulla oblongata, thetan, facsimiles, and all the rest of it, and monitor him thereafter. This, in essence, is the beginning of any religious cult. Somebody comes along who embracively heals a number of people. He yanks them into his universe, and the next thing you know, we have a cult. When somebody comes along and says to you, Dianetics and Scientology is a cult, this is a slight misnomer. Although I yank you into my universe to beat some facts into your heads, it's only just long enough to boot you the hell out. And say, stand on your own 2 feet. Now, there's, in essence, the slight difference here. Now, when we're working with processes which are working badly in the hands of auditors, you find more people going into the Scientology universe than come out. It's your duty as an auditor to keep the population stable. Yeah, if you take them in, throw them out. Well, the way you throw them out is, of course, to restore their self-determinism. And actually, this is the only way you'll ever make anybody happy and able and well. All right, now let's take these methods and find out that in postulates, there's a slight hooker, just a slight one, which is to say, there is an axiom to this effect. The postulate of a god of a universe is effective in that universe. Corollary, a universe is affected only by the postulates of the god of that universe. You understand that now? I mean, that's a very simple one. So that actually, universe processing comes under the heading of one of these three I have mentioned. Postulates. Now, you may think you're handling space and havingness and everything else, and you may have to detour into these things in order to separate out universes, but at the same time, you're actually trying to do what? You're trying to get the individual very directly, quite directly, to stop running on Mama's postulates and start running on his own postulates. In other words, stop existing in Mama's space and live in his own space. And your effort, of course, is naturally to make his postulates effective in his own universe, which reverses the condition you find him in, which is to say, Mama's postulates effective in Mama's universe in which he dwelleth. He has already joined a cult there. Now, as we come down the line and look over these three things, we find out that any process, regardless of how artful, how interesting, how demanding, of a preclear, so forth, is as effective as the auditor pays attention then to these three items. And if he goes astray, if he starts working with energy as such, if he starts running concepts as such, if he dives in and runs Rudy Rod processing, invented recently down in Alabama, you take a rod and shove it through the preclear, and if it comes out the other end, why, you have a rod back. It has Freudian significance. Anyway, the main difficulty that an auditor runs into is departing from these basics. Now, I don't say there won't be simpler basics someday, but I certainly tell you that at this time and for the last couple of years, when any process departed very far from these rudimentary things, it failed. Now, what do we have when we have a very clever, fast, witty, penetrating, sensitive auditor? What do we have? basically, if he's going to get any results. We have somebody who is working with postulates, space, and havingness. I don't care how witty he gets. But supposing we have a very witty and a sensitive and a far-reaching auditor who is getting no results. I mean, oh my, can he stir up a commotion with this case? Oh boy, he can just stir up a terrific commotion with the case. Well, case doesn't get well. What happens? He is not using postulates, space, and havingness. Now let's take those last two as a highly specialized target. Let's just take those two. Let's take space and havingness. And let's regard that as a relatively lower echelon process, since it is junior to postulates. And let's see how we weave it in and out of a case so as to produce a remarked recovery on the part of the case. The mechanics involved here are those of space and havingness. As you know, space is a viewpoint of dimension. Havingness is time. Havingness, as an object, is condensed space. Of course, you can come along and say, what do you mean, condensed space? I mean, there's particles there. Well, all right, just for purposes of argument, because you've hit your head several times on particles that you agreed to, we will say, yes, there are particles there. We'll be very practical and say the number of nuclear physicists who have gone crazy studying particles definitely determined to us that particles exist. This proves it. Actually, by the way, the nuclear physicist who continues to study particles on and on and on and on is reaching further and further and further into a limbo of untruth. And he will eventually get stuck in deep. Because he's actually looking at something which, the harder he looks, further reduces toward nothing. You know, they at first were only going to split up the bread. And then after a while, they were going to split up the chemical substances that went up to make the bread, you know, take the compounds apart. And they got the compounds apart, so they started taking complex molecules apart. And then they started taking these apart, and they found out they were looking at atoms. And so they one day started to take atoms apart, and they were just as happy as could be because, by golly, they had split the atom, they had taken it apart, they had thrown it into its component parts, and then, by God, somebody had to split an electron. They can today split electrons and protons. And also they have found neutrons and positrons and mygadotrons and what nextotrons. And this is a great difficulty for a nuclear physicist. What's he doing? He's going down this dwindling path towards zero, all the while firmly believing he's looking at something. You see, there's nothing quite as convinced as the nuclear physicist believing he's looking at something. Of course, he finds nothing. And he finds himself unable to tolerate this idea of getting clear down to the bottom and finding nothing, so he takes the alternate, sometimes the happier choice, and simply goes mad. He stands up like Oppie did the other day, Oppenheimer, and says to the United States government, "Thou shalt not make an H-bomb." Bye-bye, Oppenheimer. We've picked your brains dry, and we have an English professor who studied some of your work in the early days, and we are now making an H-bomb with this English professor. Of course, it explodes and leaves a hole where Earth was. This is, of course, not your responsibility, Oppenheimer. You have no slightest stalk in Earth at all. So sooner or later down the line, a nuclear physicist tries to pull out. He has to. Because he is into the midst of an imponderable situation. He is looking for the particle and he can't find it. And that's the essence. What is the basic particle? The basic particle is zero. And that makes just a lot more sense than any formula, by the way, in quantum mechanics. Now, an auditor who goes along firmly believing in messed universe, barriers, and so forth, is of course quite sane. He can recognize these things for what they are and use them and so forth and live his workaday life in them and get along just splendidly. But when he introduces into his processing the idea that a particle actually exists, he gets into trouble. We don't even have to go out on a long excursion for this. When he thinks in terms of condensing or uncondensing, that is to say, condensing or expanding space, and thinks of condensing space in terms of havingness, and expanding space in terms of nothingness, he succeeds with a case. What in essence is occurring as he processes this case? Now let's just look at a case, and you'll come much closer to home with what I'm talking about. I'm not wandering around very far from what you're doing. We say to a person, walk around the room and spot some spots in space. Then we say to him, all right, now look around and find some places where you are not. Or we ask him, get some places where your mother is safe. Or any one of these things, spots in space. What are you doing to this boy? Your preclear is in a state of mind quite ordinarily and usually, which brings him to believe that he can no longer create. Until he gets over this, and he just gets over to the natural course processing, until he gets over this, he keeps handling the condensed space which he already has in stock. So what's he do? He says around here, condensed space, you know, that's havingness. You take out 8, quote, anchor points, unquote, and pull them all together down to a point, you have a heavier mass. It's a heavier mass because you condense space. And don't think that space won't uncondense. It sure will, because it's put together with a postulate of condense. So naturally, it'll uncondense. So you ask this fellow, spot these spots in space. Bing, 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 bing. And if you kept this up for quite a while, all of a sudden he'd go, boil off. What'd you do to him? You uncondensed his stock of havingness. You looked up on the shelf and you said, now let's see, you've got this and this and this. Well, we will just take the soda crackers apart, and we'll take this apart, and we'll take that apart, and we'll take something else apart, and something else apart. And then don't look at him very surprised and say, what, all the shelves are empty? Because naturally, they are. You emptied them. By doing what? By directing his attention into space. You said space, 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 spot space, spot space, spot space, spot space. I don't care what process you were using. They boil down to these two processes, which is spot space, condensed space. Either way. All right. Now, our next. Next thing. You say to this boy, well, he starts to boil up because you've done this. Now you say to him, put out 8 anchor points marking the corners of cube and bring them in, either on himself as a thetan or on his body. Put out 8 more. Bring them in. 8 more, bring them in. 8 new ones, 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 bring them in. What are you doing? You're condensing space. Well, you went out here and you said, spot, 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 you see? And that uncondensed, 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 uncondensed. All right, what did you better do next? You better tell him, condense, 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 condense. Now, this is not very difficult as we weave through all of processing. We discover that in the grand tour, we handle both havingness and space because we put people into objects which they've already consented exist. But by and large, we're handling space, really. And we exteriorize them and interiorize them and exteriorize them and interiorize them. Boy, you're putting them across a distance. You're saying space, 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 space. And all of a sudden your boy goes, nyarr. He feels groggy, feels unhappy. He's liable to come up at last and say, you know, I'm nothing but a thought. He's so sad about this. Now, when you put somebody then through something like the grand tour, remember, you're processing on the grand tour for a couple, 3 minutes. You say, put up 8 anchor points, pull them in yourself, 8 more, put them in on yourself, 8 more, pull them in on yourself, 8 more, pull them in on yourself. Okay, Mars, Sun, Moon. Start changing space on him again. He'll wear that havingness out. Now, it actually isn't true that he really needs the energy in order to make the circuit. But until you get him completely out of every foreign universe he's in, the postulates of the gods of those universes, such as there must be energy, will continue to be effective upon him. And as long as the postulate there must be energy is effective upon this preclear, you had better jolly well remedy his having us. All right. Let's look over now and see how many different ways this could possibly apply. Change of space. You say, be in your childhood home, be in the room, childhood home, room, childhood home, room, childhood home, room, what'd you do? You just says, make space, make space, make space, make space, make space. And in the state you found him in, this started to uncondense his bank. After a while, he will actually just start creating the space he's making out there. He isn't running on the same energy, and you don't have to signalize the moment when he starts to do this. But as you do this, you run him out of his store of energy. Now, you'd certainly better fix him up by remedying his havingness. You say, all right, get something that he can accept and pull him in. Something except pull them in. All right, now let's take something else that's very interesting about this. Let's take the most occluded case there is and try to run change of space on him. You know, let's take a resistive 19. And we say to this boy, locate the center of the room. Now, boom. What'd you do? That's just the first step, and you just indicated one piece of space, and he started to get groggy, and he almost became sick at his stomach. Now, you see, he's just a little bit worse off than everybody else, you know. He really can't create. He is on the center of that create-survive-destroy curve. Everything he has, he got from somewhere else, he thinks. He can't create anything. He can only make things persist. And all of a sudden, you made some of his havingness unpersist. Just, you know, you said, locate the center of the room. This was enough. He'll start to get a little bit queasy on you. And I'm talking about a fellow who is really bad off. Now, theoretically, there are cases that you could say to, locate the center of the room, and they started to do so, they would become violently sick at their stomachs and begin to throw up. What would happen in such a case? Well, boy, you just had somebody whose havingness was all the way run out and who couldn't have any space anyway, and the second that you gave him the slightest bit of space, his havingness reduced way below tolerance. Well, what sort of state must he be in from day to day? You mean every time, any time he looks out into an emptiness of any kind, any time he has to recognize an emptiness, he will be very tense and possibly get sick at his stomach. But this individual, if he got sick at just recognizing the center of the room, must be in a chronic state of being ill and tense. His havingness is continually reduced very close to nothing when he feels he must have a great deal of it. His time will be upset. He will stick all over the time track. He will stick in any engram. If you just tell him about an engram, you say, all right, there's an incident on the track called the jiggler, and it goes this way and it goes that way, and the fellow says, he's in restimulation now. See, any energy is better than no energy. All right, now just look at this. Just make this a rule in your auditing. If you make this a rule in your auditing, a number of pre-clears that you will snap back to battery will just be uncounted, because you will have greater and greater successes in your auditing, regardless what processes you're using. If you're just using this basic of all processes, you say, anytime you say to this fellow, space, 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 keep your eye on him. You say, space, 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 you've got him on the E-meter, or you're keeping your eye on him, your E-meter starts to stick. Or his body twitches slightly, or he looks a little more tense, or his face starts to screw up and become rather uncomfortable one way or the other, or muscular tension lines anywhere in the face begin to tighten. You know you have gone far enough, auditor. You've said space, 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 space. Uh-oh, here we hit it. Ugh. Now, you could go on with this fellow and say, space, 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 and he'd start doing this. All of a sudden, I've got to get out of here. Bing. He'll fly out of the chair on you. He'll jump up in the session. Any excuse you possibly want to list, he'll give you. But the basic one is you just started to tear apart too much havingness, and this was very uncomfortable to him. So away he went, or he got very tense, or his legs got very restless, or he began to shudder, and his attention went right straight off of what you were doing. What did do that? Well, you just said space, 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 which you might as well have said unhave, 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 unhave. Oh, you got a loss in restimulation now. Well, unhave some more, unhave, unhave. He's dying. You just obviously, you're saying to him every time you say another spot in space, you're saying to him, die a little more. Okay, now another spot in space, die a little more now. Same thing. Well, this condition is something an auditor must watch. If he's going to watch anything about a preclear, he should watch that condition. He doesn't have to be sensitive to the preclear's moods and so forth. He just knows how much havingness this preclear has or hasn't. Well, now let's take a look at havingness. And let's find we have a step 89 something. And you know that there's always something that this fellow can have. And here we get into acceptance level processing. I call your attention to the PABs and acceptance level processing, and this is how it is used in the remedy of havingness. We get him to get something which is obviously acceptable to him. We say, this fellow seems to be having an awful lot of trouble, for instance, seems to be having a lot of trouble with teeth. Bad teeth are acceptable to him. He's got a twisted arm of some kind or another. You know, his arm is not quite right. Well, a bad arm is acceptable to him, and you know, he can actually get mock-ups of it. So what do you do? I don't care how thin the mock-up is. And boy, you should get this. Don't ever worry if your preclear's mock-ups are thin and unsubstantial and he's uncertain of them. This is one place where certainty doesn't apply. Just one place where it doesn't apply. It doesn't matter how thin these mock-ups are. Yes, you could get other things that might make them a little bit thicker and so forth, but all this will take place in due course. We take this preclear, and let's say he's got a twisted arm. We just have him get a twisted arm. We just have him get an arm that is more twisted than his arm. This is even therapeutic for the arm. But we're not interested in whether it's therapeutic for the arm or not. We're just trying to remedy this fellow's havingness. That's the only reason. And obviously, we've got to be able to get some energy into him that he can accept. So we'll have to get something he can mock up. But you say he's totally occluded and can't mock up anything. Oh, yes, he can mock up something. And there's where an auditor has to get clever. He has to look at the person and actually tell the person what he can mock up. He looks at the person. He sees so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, he says, now, let's see if we can't get a mock-up of something or other. Now, actually, he could put it on the E-meter, name a number of subjects, and get a bop, and go ahead and have the preclear mock that up. He would be able to.